I'm Colleen McNamara,
and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place!
You know what? We do all want to change the world, right? And joining me is one of the great crusaders who loves to change the world, Mike Musselman. Gunner, what's up? How are things in Texas today?
Yeah, it's good. But my change would be permanent. I want to vacate the world. Just let it go on.
It would be bent to my will. Okay, I have a question for you. I've had kind of an informal, wasn't informal. I called up Jeremiah Workman. I said, hey, can you come on for 15 minutes today? He said, yeah, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I called Jeremiah, so I see good to hear him. And I called Bob Nielsen and said, hey, could you come on? And so I'll ask you the same question. Alcohol and post-traumatic stress.
All right. Let me, my retort. Blasting caps and C4. Are you next? You going to do it again?
Okay. I got similar responses from them, too. However, when we talk about post-traumatic stress, the first thing that you don't hear is, hey, you need to stop drinking.
Well, no, because drinking is cool in those circles.
Right.
Drinking is, let's go drink a beer, so drink a fifth. Let's go. You know, and it's, one of my biggest problems with that is, like, groups. You know, these guys get out, they want to feel accepted, a part of that tribe, being forth because they're not in the Marine Corps anymore, to insert club or whatever, motorcycle club, whatever, but they're people, they don't have the same desires. Now there's some out there that are good, but women all involves drinking or browsing, being your typical guys, you know, what they think is what is a typical guy. But it continues to lead them down destruction because these guys are not the guys that are going to come up with you and go, hey, you know what, I noticed this about you. They tell you to suck it up. Beer man, have another beer. Man, have another beer. Get over it. You know, oh, you're having trouble with your wife? Go have for, you know, that'll work. You know, it's destructive behavior. And Paul accentuates that. In you know, the 10th degree. You know? It doesn't make you better. It's like the argument about every, you know, oh, when I drink, I get better. Better driving?
No.
Plane?
No.
Driving a boat?
No.
You're not even a better human. Most people, when they get drunk, aren't even beings. They're assholes. Now, you get your funny drunks. You get your quiet drunks. But they all have one thing in common. They're drunk. I mean, really? That's what you attain, you know, people remind you of, man, you know, he's no longer on this plane with us, but he's a good drunk. Really? Then you have children, and then they're going to follow in dad's footsteps, you know, or mom. Okay, but it kills to hear is still big problems, and we don't do anything about it. I mean, we were in the Marine Corps when it was drink. When you were ordered to drink, you are party, and you're going to have mandatory fun, and you're turning in empty kegs. Do you have any questions? No, sir. You know, and if you don't beer, you're on duty. What do you think? You're on duty. Things are changing. They're not for the best. They don't address alcohol as it should be. In all my course, every downfall of a good career, including the most recent, that buddy of mine, was due to alcohol. You know, bad decision. And, you know, alcohol caused relationship problems, judgment, whatever it may be, alcohol, down to alcohol. Now, granted, yeah, of those weird, you know, maybe some kind of something like that, but very, very rare. But alcohol is like, oh, how do you, of all good Marines? No doubt.
But you know, Mike, it's funny, in talking to both Jeremiah and Bob. Jeremiah was funny because, you know, he goes, I mean, it's so much of the part of our culture, right? I mean, the Marine Corps, I mean, we're tough guy, especially in the grunts, especially in the combat arms, right? You know, aviators, we're drunk, we're drinking, you know, we tell these funny stories about being overseas and doing stupid stuff, blah, 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 blah. It's a huge part of our culture. And so just me thinking about this, right? I was uncomfortable, like, so that's the reason why I recruited other people to give their thoughts, because I was uncomfortable with, like, I'm going to talk about post-traumatic stress and say, look, the first thing you got to do is you got to stop drinking. Now, that's not something that we say in our culture. We don't say that. You know, do you want to be that guy? No, I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
So it's just interesting because, you know, this whole, you know, Jeremiah's phrase, you know, got to keep the monkeys in the cage. That's a pretty popular phrase here now on All Marine Radio among people that listen, because you have this visual. Well, they're not monkeys. They're fucking gorillas. Okay. They're gorillas on crack. Okay. And so when you, and the thing that punches the exact digits to let the gorillas out is alcohol. On the cipher lock, you drink, the cipher lock, the tumblers fall in place, boom, King Kong is out. And then, the problem with King Kong is King Kong doesn't limit its damage to you. It gets your kids, it gets your wife, it gets your friends, it gets does a whole lot of damage, and then you try to get King Kong back in the cage. Now, I understand that we're all trying to...
Stay right.
Yeah. Fay Ray got thrown over a mountain. She dead. We're all trying to learn how to coexist with the monkeys in the cage, the apes in the cage. But I don't. You can't do it with alcohol. But I don't hear that many people when we talk about it and say, "Look, I'm just going to tell you. Here's rule one: stop drinking." What?
Yes.
Click. But I don't know. It's to me, it's the unmistakable truth.
Yeah, I'm trying to. Thinking about what does alcohol do for you? It numbs you.
Mm.
You know it, because I mean, I don't know a person that feels after drinking a lot of alcohol. Like, man, I can't wait to get drunk. The feeling afterwards, you know, I never said. And you know, no one remembers the experience, or you know, it's like again, at some point, at the end of a person that's drinking too much, I'd approach them and say, "Hey, listen, man, I'm your friend. I love you, I hear you, but I can't be part of your destruction. because you're not doing this. It's not good for you. It's not good for anybody. But I can't be a part of it. And people are afraid to see this. I can't witness this anymore. And it's true. I would say it. If I have a friend, and I told a man, and he said, oh, you know, F you, can you drink, you know, go screw yourself. Okay, hey, you know what? You're my friend. I'll be there for you. But I cannot longer participate in the destruction because, I mean, that's what's happening. And then more people did that. It's afraid of, well, then they're going to take their life. Okay, well, you know, hate this, the teeter-totter of, oh, but we provide, we got better than have, better than not have, than to have them drunk. I mean, you can live with him being a drunk. It's just afraid that if he tries to stop this, he's going to drop it to himself. But the alcohol is better. It makes it worse. It separates them from finding their truth. And that's the path you drink, the further you are getting from finding, you know, happiness. And if you continue to, your body becomes absorbed and then it becomes a dependency and then, I mean, forget about it.
You know,
I'm not saying
right.
Drink is an alcoholic.
You know, what's amazing, Mike, is that talking to Bob Rogers, who made the documentary Bravo, Common Men, Uncommon Valor, about Bravo 126 at Quezon. I mean, he said, I came home and I don't know for how many, a couple decades. He said, I was a maniac. Drunk, and then when I got drunk, I got mean. And it was my anger, it would come out. And he said, it wasn't until that I stopped drinking. He's built an incredible life for himself. He said, but it's like you would think, though, that, you know, we'd be pretty blunt as we've learned, because it seems to me that almost universally, when somebody's life goes wrong and there is elements of post-traumatic stress involved in it, what's the common element? It's alcohol or alcohol and drugs, one of the two or both. And it just seems like I've never heard anybody say that, though. Hey, are you affected by post-traumatic stress? Yeah. Do you drink? Yes. Stop drinking. What?
Oh.
Stop drinking.
So look at it like this, Mac. Okay. So we talk about, in combat, they survive a lot of stuff, and then they're post-traumatic stress, and then they get to drink because in some weird, demented, they believe that makes it better, or it's just
have
about
it. Right.
But you know what? You think about it. If you're dependent upon that elk, you're a loser. You're loser than I thought. I thought you were a warrior. I thought you were, you know, big, tough, you know, brain, but now you're letting this bottle of alcohol claim you as dependent. And so, losing to an inanimate object, you want a thinking enemy, but to a colored liquid and that you lost because you don't have the intestinal nor the mature right decision. So to me, that was the changing moment, was alcohol, but accentuate my, and it made it worse. Made me ass.
Okay, so can I ask a question? Because Jeremiah made a similar point. And I said, so, you know, what's really interesting, Mike, that he said when I was talking to him today, he said, you know, I finally accepted what happened. I said, really? And he said, yeah. I said, well, what caused that? He said, you know, I used to think about it and think of all the things I should have done and could have done different to change the outcome. He said, I had a moment. He said, and it's only been within the last couple years, where I said, I've got to be better, and in order for me to be better, I have to accept that I can't change it. And he said, and I think that time helped a little bit in that. I think, I think that banging your head on a piece of concrete for, 12 to 14 years, you know, even the biggest hammerhead amongst us at some point begins to realize I'm not going to win this one. But he said what really moved him was that he knew he was impacting the lives of his children and his wife. And what he might not do for himself, he would do for them. And he said, I think a combination of those factors moved me to be. And he said, look, and I don't want to make, he said, I don't want to make this too weird. He said, but I just got back from a marriage retreat in Alaska, done by an organization called Heal Our Patriots. He said, it's faith-based. He said, I'd encourage people to go. He said, first of all, Alaska is gorgeous. You know, and he starts talking about Alaska. And I said, dude, you're creeping me out right now. And he starts laughing. He goes, I know I'm that guy right now. I said, I know. This is like the world upside down. This is not like marine land. He goes, I know. And I said, I struggle with it. He said, but he said, it was great. He said, and there was 10 couples. Most of the guys there were Marines. He said, and it felt really good to be around them. Beautiful place in Alaska. He said it's run by Franklin, Billy Graham's ministry. He said Franklin Graham actually stopped in while we were there and introduced himself and met us. He said it was awesome. And it's pretty amazing the journey that he's been on. And one more thing. The Marine Corps could not have done anything worse to Jeremiah Workman if it had tried. Okay? They sent him to the drill field after going through what he went through.
Right after combat.
Right. Ridiculous, right? From there, he's awarded the Navy Cross, and he's sent on the rubber.
No. No, he's punished. Okay. There. No one's cognitive enough or smart enough, mature enough to what he's going through, the struggles he's going through. Having difficulty there, he's put on, and then while he's on quota, stepping in front of retreat. Then they give him the Navy Cross, which makes it worse for him.
Right now, he's a celebrity for the thing that he struggles with, and then they send him on the rubber chicken circuit. So he's out speaking, and then afterwards, what is everybody doing? We go to the bar and we drink. From there to Wounded Warrior and to the museum, so he can talk about it all the time. Right? Oh, hey,
yeah.
Navy Cross. What? Who Workman? I've heard of you. It's like the Marine Corps does everything that you could do to help fuel the destruction of him, and he's drinking the whole time. And so when you think about it, alcohol in your life, did you do it for you? Did you do it because it was impacting your family? Because since I've known
I did it because it made me feel better. Okay. It took me to it cleared my instead of dealing with them, it just cleared them. Then I slowly realized over time was the thoughts aren't going away, and this is not making it any better. If anything, adding to it because it's causing more problems in my life. Now I have all these other bullshit thoughts. And yeah, and finally it was just like a real, like, you know what, I gotta stop. This is just I can't do this anymore. I'm stronger than this. I mean, this is ridiculous.
All right, next question. Can you be again with the monkeys in the cage? Can you be a social drinker?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay, all right.
I've used my monkeys, man. There you go. Seriously. I mean, there's no way to get me to be in a scenario where I was in excess and be drunk. Yeah. There's no way. No, nothing. Nothing on planet Earth.
Could make you go there.
Yeah. They're dead. And, you know. I got a box with decomposing monkey car. That's it.
Interesting. No, I
keep them there, but I keep them there to remind me of what it was.
Hmm.
now. That's the other thing. Mementos, those things in your life as reminders of work. Because if those, you soon forget. Next thing you know, you're right back in the pattern.
You know, it's interesting you say that. As you say that, I have one of those things within my vision. It's a piece of comm wire. It was sitting between my feet during the memorial service, and I picked it up so I'd never forget. You know, again, one of those things that you do to remember things, except yours are probably a little bit different than a piece of comm wire. Email question. Mac, pretty deep discussion today from you Ass Monkeys. I'm curious, why do you think that step one isn't stop drinking? That's a pretty good question. I don't know. Like I said, in kind of thinking about this here over the course of the last couple weeks, that kind of went through my head yesterday. Like, well, I want to do this kind of segment. Who would I have on to give it credibility and would be interesting guests to talk about it? And Jeremiah's name popped out immediately. And then it got to me like, why is that not step one? It's the most obvious step that, that if you choose to self-medicate, first of all, that is not going to take you to a good place. It's going to make your journey, to be a better version of yourself after these experiences. It's going to make it much more difficult for you.
Because cool puff. I mean, the bottom line, I mean, we still in society accepted that, you know, to be a real, I mean, if you're a badass, you gotta drink. Gone away from it. It used to be real badasses. Now we're like, you know, dumbasses with yellow teeth smoke. What's changed in that is the guys that drink. You know, coupled with that with some degrees, people, guys that get out and grow beers, they're a badass. All right, whatever.
Right.
But, I mean, the alcohol, I mean, I didn't say it never goes away. Alcohol claimed the life of a good friend of mine, when I first moved here, that I served less than 3 years. Alcohol was the main reason why that night, he took a loaded gun to his head. But it was in the group of people that he surrounded himself because they were always drinking. It was evident. I mean, the sad thing was, now today, years later, his wife and his brother, who was submarine, I've talked to, and since then has stopped drinking because he saw the destructive pattern of his brother and what it led to. Their funeral, when these guys that surrounded himself as their brothers, they're called brothers, other veterans, they pour bottles of Jack Daniels on his grave. You know, thinking that this warrior mythological, or that, you know, all warriors drink. Now, only people were alcoholic. You know, if you look at time, any army went to battle drunk. That's fascinating. But, I mean, alcohol was not attributed to success on the battlefield.
Wait, you said that only mercenaries were on the battlefield drunk?
Yeah, the mercenaries. And in the movies, there's these extreme badasses.
Right.
No, because they die. That is due to, you know, an extreme badass. So, it was really kind of, for me, it was really uncomfortable because this culture that I was, that I was part of, that I didn't want to be associated with this type of culture. You know, extreme badasses in my mind that, again, have been branded with this idea and they get to live with it. That's their pact that they have the honor of caring for the rest of their lives. It's an honor. That's the way you have to refocus your focal length. Look at it is, you know, don't feel hard for me. Don't victimize me. This is an honor that I get and no one else. And I'm strong in this, and I will prevail. That's the real, that's the battle. And it, believe me, I know. It's a battle every day. And some guys get tired of waste, and they're like, they get tired of, oh, I can't do this anymore, or I can't live with this kind of pain, or this, you know, this cycle, when is it going to end? It never ends. Just redraw the line, move on. Quit this about how heavy your pack is. You've been to carry it because you're, you know, and you're makes you a strong guy. All drinking alcohol does is weaken your resolve. Bottom line, period. It opens up gaps and crevices for sympathy and victimization to fall into, and then once you start falling for that, then it's all over with. Believing that you are the victim. But see, that's what our culture, we have programs that want to keep veteran victims. You know, we have these, whatever, you know, programs of wounded warriors or disabled veterans that showcase them. And Jeremiah was a great example. Put them in, we encased them in glass and put them in chalk, put them in a museum. So, yeah. You gotta change your outlook. You gotta refocus. Change, solve the problem. You have to make the problem solvable. So change the parameters of the way you're looking at it.
It's just interesting. All right, we're going to take a break, and I'm going to call you back on my other phone, okay, because you're cutting in and out a little bit. And
okay.
So let me call you back on my other phone. We're going to do a little troubleshooting. We're talking about the issue of alcohol and post-traumatic stress, and why isn't stop drinking one of the fundamental steps to getting better when you're learning how to kind of live your life and coexist with the trauma, the things that you've seen. And look, I'm not talking about simply the military, but trauma, you know, whether you're a victim of violent crime, or a friend of mine, you know, had a heart attack at a young age, and the trauma that she lives with. And what's going on inside my body, and when's it going to rear its head? So anybody who lives with trauma deals with this, learning how to coexist with your trauma. So what role does alcohol play in it, and why aren't we more blunt about it? I guess it was kind of what I was getting at. So interesting discussion. We're going to take a quick break. We'll recock our connection with the gunner. See if it's me or if it's him. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world, leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
The truth is that we're back. Mike Musselman. We've been talking about alcohol and post-traumatic stress. I think that the discussion could be encapsulated by like the first 5 seconds of the question. Gunner, what do you think of alcohol and post-traumatic stress? And he laughed. So, anyway, we continue. Michael Musselman with me from Texas, joining me here on a Tuesday. And some big soccer news. Real Madrid announced today that Cristiano Ronaldo is joining the Italian club Juventus. I'm not sure that's how you say it, but you'll know if you know. So anyway, that's evidently official now. So with that announcement, but Gunner's been our World Cup correspondent, and their semifinal, the two semifinal games are today and tomorrow. Who plays today?
France and Belgium play today at 1.
France and Belgium?
Yeah.
And then who's in the other game?
And then England and Croatia.
All right. What do you and we're rooting for the France England matchup, yes?
Yeah, I'd like to see that'd be a good match.
Yeah, certainly a lot of history behind it, but England on a bit of a surprise run. They were supposed to be this good, were they?
Yeah, they were a team. They were a young team, so they were pretty far. Croatia's the one that, well, them and Russia. Russia is the one that was the underdog.
Russia, brutal. I mean, they lose one of their guys, Fernandez. Yeah, a Russian by the name of Fernandez. He misses the net. He scores.
I know,
he scores the tying goal, right? He scored the tying goal, and then he misses the net and during the penalty kicks, and they lose by one. So, going to be a piece of at home. Yikes! I don't want to be that guy, but your heart kind of breaks for him. Young guy too.
Yeah.
So and so, what time the game is on in about an hour and a half? All right. So if you're a world copper, if you're a world soccer fan, one of the things that has been a bit of a surprise relative to the World Cup is there hasn't been a whole lot of hooliganism at the World Cup. You know, I think a lot of people expected there to be more craziness because soccer fans get it on and get crazy like you know, like few other fans in the world. And so,
yeah, but they're and the Russian police don't play that game.
So in the land that doesn't have Miranda rights, you better be acting correct right now because there's a lot of cops around.
Yeah, the Russian police and the circuit launchers don't carry CS, they carry HTTP.
That's funny.
They don't fire rubber bullets or beanbags. They fire buckshot and hollow points.
You know what? It wasn't when I saw an article written like, what happened to all the hooliganism associated with international soccer? It went to Russia. they don't play. That's what happened. And then the Russians, I'm sure, put out the word, you want to act like an ass, right? We've got a gulag for you, and don't mess with us, because we're not going to be embarrassed on an international stage. All right? We're not doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got to be gifted to figure that one out. Here's a text message. How do guys who like hockey like soccer? Come on.
How do guys like hockey like soccer?
Yeah. That's easy.
Turn on the TV during a soccer match.
Yeah. Let me tell you, I didn't grow up playing it. My kids played it. Wasn't the biggest fan, but I kind of became a bit of a fan in 2004. CNN International, which we would have on in this Combat Operations Center in Ramadi, at night would put on Premier League soccer, which is the high-end European soccer. So as good as World Cup soccer is, it's kind of like the Olympics in that most of the teams are watered down because you got to compete for your country. Well, in the Premier League, you have these guys playing together on the best teams, you know, like our professional sports. And so it's much better. And the skill level's awesome. And so if you like sports, that's the first time I saw really high level soccer. And I was like, wow, it's very much like hockey in terms of breaking out, reversing, playing defense, 2-on-1, 3-on-2, all of that. I mean, it goes slower, certainly, but there's still incredible athleticism and speed in it. And so that's where I first started watching it. But I always like watching major events. Like, unlike Mike, I'll even watch the NBA final, you know, so I'll watch it.
Right.
And again, yeah, get over the flopping. I mean, it happens in a lot of different sports. And if that's your reason to hate it, you don't really want to watch it anyway, so get over it. Yeah, it's not the most masculine thing in the world, but whatever. And the spectacle of the World Cup, come on. It's the world sport, you know. It's the sport the world plays. So don't be a hater. Another email. Mac, I just listened, and in parentheses, I'm about a day behind listening on the podcast to your little segment you did on ammunition for in-home defense. I currently own a shotgun for in-home defense. Am I being stupid? Mike?
No, shotguns are good. It's good. Point defense. It's a good gun. Big spread. Yeah, it's a good gun.
All right. And what kind of ammunition if you're going to use it for home defense?
I mean, you don't have to, you know, I would go with a shorter, higher version while you're in home. You don't have ducks with that gun, and you don't have a duck or goose gun because then you're talking about a roll barrel. It's a real long gun. But yeah, just about anything. Double-aught buck.
Just birdshot okay?
Birdshot, you don't want to really hurt them. Birdshot will do a lot of damage, but double-aught buck stops the threat from becoming a threat.
So double-aught buck will kill him. Birdshot will knock him down.
You're just going to get messier. Birdshot, you may have to do If you're doing 9 shot, you'd have to hit them a few times.
Okay. So what about double-aught buck in terms of shooting it inside your house and not wanting it to go through walls and stuff like that?
Oh, double-aught buck up at the walls, man. You don't want to – if that's your concern, then don't use a shotgun.
Okay. All right. So if you are going to use a shotgun, double-aught buck for safety, but if you're concerned about it going through walls, will birdshot go through walls? I guess it depends at the distance, yeah?
Yeah, if it's a good distance, but then if it's a good, you're not going to go through a person either.
Aye.
So, I mean, there's a comparison. You can look at some, there's, I think you want to get away from these, radical designs on, you know, pellet design or, you know, kind of thing. If you don't want to really seriously hurt somebody, you know, look at a civilian version of like beanbag round. I just want to disarm them and neutralize them. So, I mean, there's, or the rubber sabots, you know, but you better know what you're doing. I mean, someone gets hit with a rubber, it's going to momentarily incapacitate them, but an angry person who's just been hit with a rubber.
Interesting.
And if he did, yeah, and if he did want to harm you, he's definitely now.
Interesting. Let me read you an email from yesterday. No, one more text question. Where's the American team? We didn't qualify.
We didn't even make it. Yeah,
we didn't make it. We'll make it in 8 years though. 4 years, you guys still got to qualify. 8 years.
We host it.
We host it. So we're in, baby. Yeah, buy your tickets. Buy your tickets today. Here's a leftover email. here's one from today. Hey Mac, could you ask the gunner if he did not join the Marines, did he have any other options? This is the second time he sent this. I got this or saw it after the program. One of our shows ended last week. Did he have any other options for a career? In addition, why did he join the military? So, were you thinking about anything else when you got out of high school?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the main reason was just I was tired of school. I wanted to go to exciting. I wanted to challenge. I wanted to toughen up a little bit. I wanted to see what else was out there and see if, do this while I was young. So, you know, maybe that way later on in life, it was, you know, I wouldn't push them, you know. So I have a lot of respect for them and, you know, but no, to be a, you know, my main thing is I really like science. So I was really leaning to be a biologist.
Science?
Yeah, I was a real big science nerd.
Oh my god, I hate science. If we started talking science, old Mac, he's tuning out.
Yeah, science was forte. I love chemistry. I love science. I love
no kidding.
You know, marine biology. I like biology.
Shit. What class of mammal? Who gives a shit? Not us.
Yeah, I like it. That's cool.
Yeah, I didn't like any of that. I loved
history. I'm glad. I'm happy that everything. I did what I did. So
I loved history and PE. I guess those are my favorite subjects.
I loved history, but I didn't want to be in it. I didn't want to live history.
Being in history, what do you do with it, right? I don't know. Let me make sure so did you give any serious thought about going to college?
Yeah, absolutely.
Minnesota State, Mankato? U of M?
No, I was
Go be a gopher?
No, I was looking at biology schools.
Oh.
Oceanography to me was like, I was really cool. I loved, like, the tectonic plates and how you know, the earth was formed and all that stuff. So I was really liking leaning really towards oceanography.
Wow. Now, truth be told, just so people know, Mike's dad was a Marine. So when you, did you look at the other services when you looked to, when you looked at the military, did you look at the other services or what?
No, I mean, I had no aspirations to be in the Air Force, whatsoever. I did Army only because at the time, it was going to be a toss-up. If I was going to join, then I wanted to go to the Army Ranger.
Oh. And what swayed you in the end?
That I really didn't like. I didn't like the big Army background. I didn't like it. You know, I just thought about them turned me off. And for the most part, like the Marines that I was around or that I saw and stuff like that, I was really, you know, I was kind of awestruck with the way they acted.
Yeah, we can do the awestruck thing. I'll tell you what though. I mean, the Army Rangers are legit though, straight up legit. The Mac, how did you get in the military? I didn't. I had no connection. I got out of the military. I wanted to be a baseball player, but I'd always been a fan of the military growing up, and read about it. I mean, that's all I read about. If I wasn't reading about baseball, I was reading about history, and I probably read more about military history in particular, Civil War, and then for whatever reason, I loved to read about the Marines in the Pacific. And then when my dad became manager of the Padres, I saw a lot of Marines. They'd be at Jack Murphy Stadium. They'd bring their recruits over on Sunday. They'd go to the baseball game. They'd sit up there on one side, up in the second deck, and they'd be like sitting at the position of attention, right? And with the hats up there, and then on the other side you'd have the recruits from the Naval Training Station, and they were up there having a party. And it was such a drastic contrast, and it kind of, for me, in a very novice way, affirmed the things that I thought about the Marine Corps. And so, but I got to college. Nobody in my family had ever been in the Marine Corps. Nobody in my family had ever been an officer. I went to work for Merrill Lynch up in Los Angeles, and I hated it. And after about a year of doing that, I said, I'm not going to do this. And my dad was a really bad role model because, you know, I mean, he'd go to work at Fenway Park, right? He'd go to work at Yankee Stadium. It's like, how fun is that? So I thought, you know, there ought to be days when you have fun. You get fired up to go to work. It ought to be part of, if you're going to do this for your life. And so I sat down and I listed all the things I like to do. And I thought, well, I'll go in the military, and because I've always been a leader in anything I've ever been involved in. I've always been one of the leaders, and then or I'm going to go become a teacher and a coach because I thought I would enjoy that, and I thought, well, if I go become a teacher and a coach and I don't like it, I'll be too old to join the Marine Corps. So the sequence has to be join the Marine Corps. If you hate it, get out and go teach and coach. And so I did the Marine Corps. So that's how I got in. But I didn't have a clue to what the Marine. I knew the propaganda. I knew what the poster said. I knew what I'd seen in movies, and I knew what I'd seen around, which was kind of the wow factor of the Marine Corps. But
right.
I didn't know. I didn't know. Other than that, I didn't know shit. I went down and signed up, and I went. Like probably a lot of people throughout history, right?
Yeah.
I knew the propaganda. Yeah. I knew the propaganda. Did your dad ever talk to you about the Marine Corps, Mike, when you got ready to get serious about it?
No.
You didn't say, son, no. I don't think you have what it takes. You maybe should Minnesota National Guard?
No. He never talked about his experience. He didn't really start talking about his Marine experience until after he came up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he had a very negative experience in Vietnam. He was in some pretty bad battles. He saw, you know, he lost a lot of good buddies.
Who was he with, Mike, and when was he in Vietnam?
He was with two units. He started with Mike 3-1. And when Mike 3-1 was due to rotate back out of the country, they'd been there for I don't know how long. He still had been left on his contract, you know, because they were 13-month rotations.
Right.
And so a bunch of his buddies and him transferred over to Mike 3-5.
Oh, no kidding. You guys are both 3-5 guys.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. What and what year? So units are rotating out, what,
69, 70? 67,
68.
So, yeah.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the bad stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. Wow. Interesting. Interesting stuff. Here's, I want to read you this email because it got written yesterday, but I missed it. It's entitled "The Gunner is Right." Stupid parents thin the herd all the time. Think of the ones that drive recklessly with their kids in the car. How many kids get killed that way? The parents that allow a toddler to drown in a pool? Question mark. Poisonous products under the sink? Question mark. Opiates in the medicine cabinet? Question mark. If you're stupid enough to leave a loaded gun around a toddler, then don't be surprised you win a stupid, tragic prize. The gunner is right about the narrative. The left gleefully uses these awful stories to push the anti-gun agenda, while the stories about the lawful use of guns to defend families don't get much press. So I thought I should read that to you because somebody said you were right. The question was whether when you're sitting with a group of friends and people you know or whatnot, and the issue, I used the story of a two-year-old and then found out that it happened twice in the same damn weekend, last weekend. Two-year-olds were shot themselves with guns that were left adrift in their home. And would Mike bring it up and say, hey, and when somebody says, oh, did you see this story? Somebody, it seems like, always says, I don't have guns in my house. I never have my kids around guns. Do you feel it kind of a responsibility to say, hey, I understand the sentiment, but you need to teach your kids the gun that may kill your kid may not be in your home? And Mike kind of gave an answer to that, and this is a response to that. Any further thoughts on that subject from yesterday?
No, I mean, like I said yesterday, you know, nothing, just because the gun changed the dynamic of you're responsible for the upbringing of your, introduce them to those things that are going to be, that could be a potential threat. You know, like, again, I was talking to this afterwards was, you know, again, why, you know, you ask the family, do you have a pool in your backyard? Do you have a river or lake? No. Do you visit the lake? No. But why did you teach your son or daughter how to swim? Well, it's a life skill. You know how to do that, you know, in case they actually find themselves in the situation. Okay. But you don't apply common sense to, teach safety about guns. No, we don't. We're not a gun culture. Well, we don't. But, and that's where it's, really, you know, again, you teach them all these good habits of all the life skills they need. But, and then, well, then they get the argument is, you shouldn't have to. Yeah, you're right. We shouldn't have to. And people shouldn't have to die of starvation or malnutrition or disease and famine and being eaten by heart. I mean, go on and on. Yes, there's a lot of shouldn't have to, but it's the life we live, it's the world we live in.
Yeah, no.
Quit arguing the fact that you can't change, you can't act, and then just, you know, live blissfully in the world that we do live in. And, you know, teach them these things.
No, I agree with it. It's not the world according to GARP. You know, it's not the world that you want to live in. It's the world that you do live in. And so when I hear, like, okay, Pollyanna, okay, I know that you want to live in that world, but the truth is we don't live in that world. And so I would invite you to live in the world and deal with the world as it is, and hopefully it'll make you more effective. So I don't know. I don't know. I agree. That's to me the most frustrating part. You're gonna wish this away. God bless you. I hope it all works out for you, but I fear that, you know, you're not preparing your kids. So anyway,
Anyway, the another email. Mac, I have another ammunition question. I'm going to go do some long-range target shooting with friends, mostly metal targets that we've acquired over the course of the years. I've been introduced to the discussion about ammunition listening to your program. Does the gunner have any recommendation in terms of good ammunition for longer range shooting? What I should look for?
Well, one, I don't know what caliber you're shooting. Typically in those kind of cases, you're more expensive type ammo. It's not an answer I can clearly give over without knowing. There's a lot of factors I don't know.
Right.
Again, I don't know the length of your barrel. I don't know the caliber of your round. I don't know the rate of your barrel. Those type of things. The answer would probably be there's a lot of things that you can download.
Like a roller coaster.
Both Android or iOS, iOS. Find one that's easy to use, download it, input all of the information that you own, like your gun information, and then start experimenting and then put in different types of rounds that are out there and look at the trajectory and the ballistic fall offs and all of the parts. And then it'll give you, that way you can then look and see what round best suit, how heavy of grain I want to use, and yada yada, how many feet per second am I looking at. It's people don't understand a gun, they buy a 7.62 rifle. And then the thing they do to the guys, they say, I need to buy a box of bullets. And the person behind the counter just hands them a box. And, behind them, there's 100 different type of boxes. The problem with the two is most of the selling you the gun, they're not experts in the fact that they know exactly what works well with what they have. They'll just, as long as it's the chamber and it'll work. But that's not necessarily the case. So it's a lot more complicated. You pull up to the gas station, you got 3 gas, depending on what you put on your car. It's not that easy. There's a little more complicated of what you want to achieve. If you're shooting just steel, do you want to, are you going to use that same load for animals? I mean, it goes back and forth. And it's an engineer project. So what do you want the end result to be? I want to be able to hit a steel target at 800 within a 3-inch group. Okay. So that's what I want to achieve. Now reverse engineer back. What gun will get me there? What bullet? These guns will work. These bullets. Okay, so then you go buy this gun. The problem is we buy it. And then we buy the... And then we try and then we take those two things and make them applicable to what we want to achieve. And that's where we fall short. If you're ever especially in target shooting with rifles, figure out what and the result. You don't want to count as much. Do you want the bullet to be more precise? Do you want a flatter trajectory? Do you want to shoot out to 1,100 yards? Do you want to shoot 2,000 yards? What is it you want to achieve? And reverse engineer back. You'll end up buying the gun. And that'll get you your scope, rifle, and your bullet.
That's wow.
What we do. And what he's got a rifle, he has a scope. Now he's trying to find a bullet to achieve what he wants to achieve. And that's harder to do. But it's still easy. It's not complicated. It's just, it takes a little bit longer steps and it takes a lot more on your end. But, and like I said, email you, or you probably got his email once. You can send him my, and I'll send him a bunch of information to do the. Because my answer is, I'm not going to do it for you. Unless you send me a check, I'm not going to do it for
them.
Because the problem is, again, I want you to, because once I teach you how to fish, you'll be forever. We got to stop the idea of handing a fish out all the time.
Nice. I like that. All right, what else you got going on today?
We got the game.
Oh, that's right. Momentarily, right?
Yeah, I was watching Inglourious Blasters. Have you seen that show?
You know, I started to. It looked a little crazy. You know, it looks like this. Was it good? Because it looked a little stupid to me. It looked like one of those overheated, stupid war movies.
It's a Tarantino film, right?
Right. So, yeah, exactly.
If you're a Tarantino fan and you like his type of movies, then it's an entertaining movie. If you're looking for historical content, if you're looking for anything that's closely regarding reality, then my suggestion is stop watching Tarantino films.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I really. It's funny to me.
Oh, it's funny.
Well,
that's interesting because I would. If somebody were to say to me, do you think Gunnar will enjoy this? I would have said, I don't know, you know. I don't know if he'll see the humor in that because it's, you know, some of it depends if it goes into the inner sanctum. If it goes into the inner sanctum, sometimes it's hard to see this humor in, and you're just like, yeah, whatever, I'm out.
Well, but see, I started doing that. I'm not expecting historical.
Right. Well, that's good. Right. You're obviously growing as a person. I like that.
Yeah, right.
Come on. A lot of people didn't think it was possible.
I know.
Because you've already achieved a pretty advanced level of enlightenment. This I know from speaking to you. Yes?
It's a very, very broad spectrum of color that's in my portfolio. So
exactly. And a very high, very, very refined colors. It's not like Crayola stuff, right?
This is like standard. Yeah. Not your beat of the colors of the rainbow.
No, I'm with you. It's big.
Boy, beat it.
This is big time stuff. Big time stuff. All right. Well,
remember
what?
Hey, do you remember Roy G. Biv?
No.
The colors of the spectrum. Roy G. Biv was the acronym.
All right. See, I told you I don't like science. I don't like that kind of stuff. I would never remember that.
Red, orange, yellow, green, indigo, and violet.
How did
Roy
you?
G. Biv.
When did you memorize that?
Fourth grade.
Fourth grade, really? See, I didn't. Yeah, I wish I would. I wish I. See, there's a whole lot of things if I could have done, like you know what? If they would have told me, like, I don't know if I said this to you before, but, like you know, the bread truck in the word problem, the bread truck leaves Poughkeepsie on its way to Binghamton at 9 a.m. going 60 miles an hour. The ambulance. That's leaving Poughkeepsie, headed to Binghamton, leaves at 9:15, and it's going 45 miles an hour. Where will they intersect? See, I don't have any interest in that. If they would have said, you know, Warren Spahn's fastball goes 98 miles an hour, Mickey Mantle's bat travels, you know, at X speed, where will the bat and the ball intersect if Spahn releases the ball at zero? I would have been all about figuring that out. The story affected my ability to learn, and nobody ever like got me into the color spectrum with some kind of stupid acronym like you did in fourth grade. You were bored to be in the Marine Corps if you had dumbass acronyms like that in fourth grade.
Yeah, Roy G. Man.
So when they told you when they laid BAMSIS and SMEAC on you, you were like, yeah, this place is awesome.
Yeah, I love this place. Okay.
That's nice. That's like, what is it? Left, up, right, down, something like that. I can't remember. Anyway,
Lars right. And yeah, Lars rule. Dad, right back.
The gunner made for the Marine Corps doing acronyms in fourth grade. Nice. All right, good luck in your soccer game. I'll talk to you.
I'll talk to you.
Yeah. The one and only, Michael Christopher Musselman. That'll do it on a Tuesday. Email. Mac, I'm with the last guy. Pretty entertaining and interesting subject today, alcohol and post-traumatic stress. Why don't we tell people to stop drinking? I look back at my friends that struggle, and good God, I would say that every episode we ever went through was either while drinking or in the aftermath of drinking. Interesting institutionally why we don't say that right up front. Also, Jeremiah Workman is pretty cool. That guy's the real deal. Sharing his struggle. I've listened to that interview a few times. Blows me away every time I listen to it. To hear him come on today and talk about, even in the last 2 years, how his life has changed was pretty cool. You ought to add that piece to the interview as an addendum. Not telling you how to live your life, but I'm just saying, it's a little bit of the rest of the story. Then in parentheses, I know you listen to Paul Harvey. I've heard you do it, your imitation of him. I have listened to Paul Harvey. All right, that'll do it. Tomorrow, pretty interesting interview. Jim Capers. If you do a search on Major Jim Capers, a black staff NCO in the 60s, like Wesley Fox, like, who else have I had on this program? Jim Bathurst. They were given commissions. One day you're a gunny or a first sergeant, the next day you're a second lieutenant. Sent to Vietnam, became part of 3rd Reconnaissance Battalion. And so you're going to meet him tomorrow. There's a documentary being made about his life. And it's some of it's pretty sobering, right? He's his wife's passed away, his son passed away, so he doesn't have any family anymore. And we're going to talk about his life, his career, and his struggle with post-traumatic stress. So, Major Jim Capers, United States Marine Corps. And that courtesy of Phil Smith, who you've heard on the program before. So, Phil Smith, good dude. Anyway, have a great day on a Tuesday. Again, my thanks to the people that come on, make the program obviously what it is. But Jeremiah Workman coming on short order this morning. My thanks to him. Bob Nielsen doing the same thing. Hey, Nielsen, what are you doing today? Why? I need you to come on. What do you want me to talk about? I don't want to tell you. Okay. And Jeremiah didn't even ask me, what are we talking about? Yeah, so pretty cool. So, don't touch that dial. If you didn't hear those two segments, they're coming up. So, you'll hear news headlines at the start of the program, and then in about an hour, you'll hear Jeremiah Workman, followed by Bob Nielsen. So, on that note, have a great afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow, Major Jim Capers. And then we'll talk resumes on Thursday again with our resume, Master Gunnery Sergeant, Linda Field. So, you'll hear from her. Have a great one. All Marine Radio, over and out.